Welcome to the Bravo Dog Knowledge Podcast. I'm Renee Erdman, your host. I am a certified behavior consultant and dog trainer and own bravodog.ca. Today we're talking to Sebastian Larrabet. I hope that I pronounced that correctly. He hails from Montreal, Quebec, and he owns bravofido.com. He's been working with dogs for, I think he mentioned, close to 8 years now, and he's a what we call a crossover trainer. That means he started using traditional, more punitive methods and made the conscious decision to cross over to more modern, force-free, and positive-based methods. Hi, Sebastian. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I know you're quite
busy. Hi, Renee.
I know you're quite busy, like all of us are that work with animals.
Yeah, my schedule is quite full.
So, let's chat a little bit about your introduction to dog training and where you started from originally.
Sure. I've been a professional trainer for 8 years now, but it all started way, way back when I was a kid and was a dog owner. Back in the days, my dad and I used to go for training classes with a local trainer near my hometown. I was, 13, 14 at a time. So every Sunday, we'd pack the dogs in the car and we'd drive there and we'd go for 1 or 2 hours of dog training, jump back in the car, get back home. And I still remember those days as pretty much the best part of my teenage life. And back in the days, all of that training was done using choke chains, aversive training tools, and a lot of pressure. We did use treats, but they were rather rare and far between.
Okay. Well, there's a bright little bright spot there, right?
Yeah. So that's how I started, like, getting the bug, if you want. Years later, I was working in computers and I was getting quite bored with my job. And I always caressed that dream of working with animals. And at some point in my life, I said, you know what? This is not going to happen unless I make it happen. So I basically quit my job and went for a training class. So I leaped, I jumped.
Yeah.
And now I've been doing that full time for 8 years. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. Great. So you decided, okay, I'm going to go education and some training so that I can train people and their dogs. Tell me a little bit about the methods that you were taught originally and how you felt about that approach.
Well, when I started out and when I started looking for schools, one thing you have to know is that up here in Quebec, our dog training is not regulated, right? So It's pretty much the Wild West. Anybody teaches whatever they damn want, and they do it the way they want. So I was looking for options, and I found a school that had a really, really good far-reaching reputation. I mean, we heard of them back in my hometown, which is like 6 hours away from where I live now. So I thought, okay, well, that's where I want to go. And those people work the same way I was trained as a teenager. So they use choke change, they use negative reinforcement, lots of pressure-based techniques, lots of setups. So you punish your dog when they do wrong and so on. So I joined, I signed up, I paid my money and I went for class. And the thing that people have to realize is that the way it was taught and the way I was brought to see the behavior of animals in that scenario was that I enjoyed every single bit of it, most of it. Some of the techniques shown were a bit too harsh for my taste and I never really applied them. But the basic of it was I spent a number of weeks yanking my dog on a leash to get him to sit and down and stay, and he did it all. So that's kind of where I started. And once I was done with that series of class, which lasted, I think, 6 weeks full time, well, I got out of school with my diploma in pocket and I just put up my shingle and started working.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I started.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So you had a starting point and then I'm assuming you continued your sort of quest for education through books, or what was your next step?
Well, I never, even during class, I started buying dog books, you know. Back then, Cesar Millan was getting big on TV, so I watched his show. But I also read books that came from another angle. I never really believed in one-sided views of things, you know. I wanted to see what other trainers around the world had to say. So I started reading Jan Dunbar, and I read Karen Pryor, I read Gene Donaldson. And Most people were claiming things that were quite opposed to what I was learning in school and eventually what I was using in class. And what they were saying is that all the techniques that I used were detrimental to the dogs, right? They were certainly not fun for them. I was aware of that to an extent because my original teachers were not loonies. You know, they would tell us that, yeah, the dog doesn't like it when you press on his bum, that's why he sits. That's kind of the goal, you know, and we dose it as to not break them, but we do pressure them. So this was all very clear, but there was all this literature of people claiming different. And it was hard for me to believe that all those people were either insane, right, or wrong. I was like, there has to be something there. So this next question was there, and I did originally try to switch my own dog to clicker training. I read the book, it sounded convincing, and it was claiming that, you know, animal trainers and marine mammals and other in zoos and stuff use those techniques. I was like, well, if it works in a lion, it's bound to work in a domestic dog. But back then, I had no teacher, I had no one to accompany me through this, so it failed miserably. After like 2 or 3 weeks, my dog became completely unresponsive to any command. Now I know why, but back then I did not. So I was like, well, this is complete crap.
Oh no.
Those people are insane, right? They're insane. It's obviously not working. So I stopped trying to switch my methods. I went back to what I knew and what worked. So that was the kind of, but it never went away, right? The thought never went away. And that's where I started out with.
It's really interesting that, and it makes sense to me now hearing what you're saying about not having really anybody to guide you to make that switch initially or to coach you, is that it in your eyes failed. And so I can see that happening with other people that perhaps maybe want to make a change but don't have the right guidance or education, right? So it's interesting to hear you say that, because I'm sure you're not alone at that stage in your journey.
Well, one thing I can tell you is that I've accompanied hundreds of people over the years crossing over, and I tell every one of them two things. First, don't do this alone, okay? Because it's not going to go well. And second, prepare to see all your training go to waste. Everything you've done will stop working for a while, probably, right? Your dog will stop responding, completely stop responding. You will feel like they're mocking you. You will feel like they're winning this proverbial dominance war that traditional trainers have been claiming for decades. Okay. This is exactly how it feels like. It feels like you let go of the pressure and the dog gains power again. This is how it feels like. What I do tell them is that with somebody to coach you, there's an after. Okay. It starts working again. But yeah, I didn't know that back then. I was alone, so I just let it go.
So do you, when you talk about helping people cross over, are these clients, or have you also worked with other trainers that have reached out and said, hey, I could use some guidance in this process?
It's been easier to accompany clients. I've had a few trainers come to me. I've helped at least one who notoriously did a big switch and revamped her whole business, and now she employs people, so it's kind of cool. Because she would have employed many people otherwise, you know. So it's better for the dogs. And it's easier with people because the people that come to you as customers either come to you because, well, the techniques don't work for their dog. It's made things worse or dangerous. You know, I work with a lot of aggressive dogs. I work a lot of biting cases. So generally, when I go in a bite case, somebody tried to choke the dog. And it did not go well. So it's easier because they're confused and lost and they need real solid help. Or they did research on their own and they said, you know what? I don't feel good doing those things to my dog anymore. And then you help them. Okay. Trainers, it's harder because, well, if you're earning your keep, you know, if you're earning a living, and I know because I've done it. Saying that all your tools are now useless is very scary. The prospect of turning around and saying to all your customer base as well, depending on how long you've been doing that, well, you know what? I was wrong. You shouldn't do that to your dogs. It's also very, very upsetting. I've had many trainers question me. I've got into arguments with many trainers who never did any switch. They just listen, argued back all the old arguments that I know by heart because I used to use them. And they just said, well, you know what? No, I'm not doing that. So trainers that do a switch are not as common. Customers are more common.
Yeah, gosh, I have such huge respect for somebody that's crossover, whether it's a client or it's a trainer, which, yeah, I don't see a lot of trainers crossing over, but huge respect for them when they do, because, yeah, it takes you admitting that what you used to do was either incorrect or not effective or not humane, and now you're taking a new path or direction. But I really think that folks that do decide to do that, they actually would gain a lot of respect from a new set of clientele, perhaps.
Well, even
You
my
know.
old customers, the way I had a partner back then. We had a boarding facility and we gave training classes and we switched at the same time. And the way we spun it to our customers, was that, well, we believe in keeping ourselves educated. We believe in going for better tools all the time and following whatever advancement, learning science gives us. And this is where the field is going and this is where the science is pointing. So we're going to go there. We apologize for any wrong, counseling we might have given you, but now we're here and we have better techniques and better knowledge. And many of them just followed suit. They switched, honestly. They just because we had a good customer base, they liked us, they were like, all right, we're gonna go with the new stuff. New customers were easier,
Of course, yeah.
Now I've been doing that for 8 years. I have a rep in the field. It's extremely rare that somebody's gonna call me and expect me to choke train their dogs.
Right.
Though it still happens once in a while.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that, I think that's what I would hope the general public wants, is that when they're paying money for a service, that they want something that is as up to date as possible. People are always wanting the newest, the best, state of the art. That's essentially, we need to update what we're doing as science progresses and as information arises. It's just to me, it's archaic that we would think that using methods from the military are still going to be what we would go to, right? But it's all a process, and I can imagine, I can't speak for other people, but what is the point? Where is the point where we decide to change? Is it because the humane societies put things into place to is it government saying that it's going to be regulated, which scares a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the switch point has to be a very personal thing. I mean, yes, there is the lawmaking and the way the schools are now pumping out their information. I mean, it's hard now to find a school that will train you in reverse. We still have a few down here, but most schools are up to date, and it's rare. People with my skill set, my original skill set, are getting rarer and rarer. I'm actually getting demands from local trainers sometimes to give them training on all the tools we used, because they want to understand them. They don't want to use them, but they want to know what's going on. But all of that pressure doesn't necessarily make people really shift. For me, the biggest thing, with all the readings I did and everything, was one dog that I met as a customer back when I was not a nice trainer. And this one I couldn't fix. He just became, I mean, now I know he was literally going insane with the double messages of being punished and rewarded and all the poison cues and all. This dog was going nuts. He was way too sensitive to take any of what we were doling out, even at the smallest doses. He was an extremely sensitive being, and he would be like perfect one day, completely unresponsive the next day. He would be nice, then he would bite. He was going completely cuckoo. And it was kind of a point in my young career where I said, okay, something's off, We obviously did not do a lot more work with this animal. Then I think it was then I took a seminar with Jan Dunbar, which kind of nailed a bit more of the idea. And finally found a local trainer who was working in positive reinforcement for like 20 years. He's a big name locally. And the first thing he did was teach me body language, which nobody had ever done. That's one of the big things you don't really see in aversive facilities, real body language. Because if you see, you can't really do it. And after that point, so I had this dog that didn't go well. The seminar with Jan Dunbar was like, well, here's a renowned expert going around the world, you know. I guess he can't be lying about everything, right? The body language, and then my eyes kind of popped. You know when everything clicks, right? And for one good week, I started looking at the dogs I was training, really looking. And then after I did that, I went back in all my memories to all the other dogs I'd trained. And then I lost sleep for a while there because I was like, oh God, what have I done? And I think that I considered stopping. I considered, okay, I'm gonna go. I can't work with dogs anymore. I'm a terrible person. And I finally decided, well, I can either take all this experience in stride and move forward or stop. And I chose to continue. But this brought me to another element I believe blocks people. It's guilt. The fact that you've been hurting dogs for whatever, how long, or how harsh you've been, now you have to swallow that. You have to realize that, yeah, you did that. You were the scary person. You were the basically torture dollar to that animal or to those animals for a number of time, years, months, weeks, whatever. Now you have to accept that, accept that it was bad, and move forward. Not everybody can do that.
No, it's got to be really tough. I don't know if you've seen that video of Dr. Sophia Yin when she discusses her prior training methods and how guilty and awful she felt about it as well. And it really, I can't, I personally have never used aversive training. That's never, I've never started that. I've observed it, absolutely. And I'm educated on every different method and tool. However, I've never used these methods. So to me, it's extremely interesting to talk to somebody about where they started in that with that type of training, and then their decision to make changes. And I have huge amount of respect that you did continue on, because so many dogs and people are benefiting from the fact that you've done that.
Well, at some point, there's the guilt, and there's also the fact that now you have to amend for it.
Retribution,
I have to fix my mis. I have to make more good. I mean, it's not really possible. I can't erase the bad, but I have to generate more good out of this. And one advantage, if I can put it like that, of having of being somebody who did all those things, and it's that when I have a customer or a trainer, anybody who wants to look into crossing over or is curious or anything, they never feel super bad talking to me because every crappy thing they did, I did. It's very, very, I taught a class I taught a behavior class to people who were aiming to become zoo therapists, psychological assistance dogs and stuff like that. So they all had a dog partner that they wanted to train to start doing therapy in like hospitals and psych wards and stuff like that. And most of those people had a basic understanding of learning already. They just needed more precise tools for their dogs. And where I'm going with this is when we started out, I told them, I tell people I'm very, very transparent about where I come from. This is how I started out. So you might hear people tell I was a terrible trainer back in the day. I was scary, and it's true. And I tell them everything bad that you can do to a dog, I did. And at least half of all my students, when I say that, gasp. And for a minute, they look at me like I'm a monster. It doesn't last very long because I've switched. And it's a very solid switch now. It's been 7 years, so I'm not going anywhere. But this is how people that cross over can be made to feel when they go to someone for help. Because if you've been a sweet, humane trainer all your career, it's almost impossible to not recoil when somebody tells you, yeah, I've been pronging my dog, and he yelps when I do it, and he bit me. Okay, anybody who's from a more modern class hearing that will generally have a little eye twitch or something. And it can make people very, very, very uncomfortable. They already feel guilty. They're already feeling very bad about this. It's hard for them to feel judged on top. I very rarely make people feel like that because, well, can judge you, done that.
It's a really important point, and I think I do have quite a few clients that come to me that have already been using other methods, and making sure that you are not judgmental is huge, because they've already swallowed their pride, you know, likely coming to you wanting some change, or maybe they're just still unaware that what they're doing is wrong. But if you approach it the wrong way with them, you are going to make them feel bad. They're going to be less open to learning what you're hoping to teach them. And it's just really ineffective. So I think, you know, even if you can't relate to using those methods, I think your client counseling skills really need to be sharp when you work with people that are either using, you know, prong, shock, or correction-based training. And it just takes practice and just really sort of, this is just me speaking about my experience, which is empathizing with them that they did the best with what tools and knowledge they were given, and that your job is to just give them better ones.
Yeah, one of the first thing I tell people like that is, because some of them come and they're quite upset because they did they did their due diligence. They found a trainer, they took classes, So like, yes, and it's wonderful. You're a great dog owner. You did what you had to do. You just didn't know, and nobody's there to tell you, don't do this, right? I mean, aversive trainers won't tell their customers, don't come. They won't. They want the business, they need it. So it's true, we have to be very, very compassionate to those people outside of sheer and really purely abusive situations, of course. But for me, good people who were just on the wrong track because they didn't know, or they've been counseled by somebody who made them believe this was it, they have to be treated with a lot of empathy because they often feel terrible about what they did.
And I think too, another thing that I noticed with somebody or a client that's been using other methods, like quite commonly I'll see a client that is maybe they're in their mid-50s, and you know, the training methods that were available in the past, you know, that was the only option, right? And so the habit to use corrections and use the leash a lot and force, it doesn't change overnight. You
Took
know,
me a
you
year.
have to expect. Yeah,
Took
that's
me a
exactly
full
right.
year to stop having the reaction to yank on my leash when something happened, or to just like body stance, scold my dog, you scold my dogs, It took me a full year to wash that out of my system. It's
And you were
extremely powerful.
consciously doing that. You were consciously making a change at that time, right? And it
Oh, yeah.
still took
And
you a year.
I
So
was
you have to
convinced.
think,
Okay, I was convinced. I was absolutely convinced now that this is what I was going to do. So it was a decision, a rational decision that I made fully, and I never came back from it. But the habit, the motor memory of all those things took a year.
And so you have to think that when you're working with a client who has that history, is if you continually coach them in a way that makes them feel bad, or you're correcting them constantly, it falls apart. You
Of
have
course.
to, you really have to, in my opinion, you've got to, again, you know, repeat your and demonstrate a lot and give them a lot of positive reinforcement for the things. You know, it's the same as your dog training, is reinforcing the behaviors that they are correctly displaying, and then they're going to do it more often. But it, you know, for us trainers, is really making sure that we don't make them feel worse than, you know, we just don't make them feel bad for making mistakes.
Well, the thing is, we make mistakes. I still make
Of
mistakes,
course, yeah.
and we always will. And again, it's always the balance of, all right, is this something that needs to be called right now because the dog is suffering? Or
Right.
is this something that, all right, it's annoying and we're going to try and get it out of there, but there's so much good going on and we're going to go, we're going to focus on that. They're feeding the dog, they're treating the dog, they're not raising their voice to the dog anymore. It's wonderful. It's a very, very good start, right? So I agree with you. One of the things also that people don't realize, and I again, it seems to be a taboo. Lots and lots of trainers, including crossover trainers, will not talk about that. I always talk about it though. It's how hard it is for your ego as a human being when you switch because you realize that dogs are not subservient creatures. that have been placed in our world to be our underlings. And that's very, very hard to accept because one of the biggest things that traditional trainers use is the hierarchy model, you know, where you have to be the top dog, right? In a world that's very hard to control, with a lot of events being scary and stressful and, you know, work and family and job and money and everything, having a being who you believe that the sole purpose of this being is to be your underling and that you have to keep him down because it's nature. Honestly, it feels good. It feels reassuring and it gives you immediate control over things that are annoying to you because when your dog does something bad, you can fix it right away. Okay. And this is a very, very subtle and almost pervert phenomenon that happens because you, the human, are being deeply reinforced every time you punish. Okay. I know because I liked
Well, and
it.
that's why it continues and evolution for dog training methods is a slow process, right? It's such an excellent point that you make. It's highly reinforcing for the trainer because it's fast, and it works immediately if you're using certain methods, right? But it is quite short-sighted. But that control in a world where we don't have a lot of control, or a lot of us feel we don't have a lot of control in that one area of your life, and the one relationship that you feel you can control, that would be it.
Yeah, and people feel immensely flattered at the thought of being top dogs. It's a purely psychological reaction. But I know because I felt like that. Felt awesome to be able to tell my dog, sit, stay, and then he will not move no matter what happens. Another dog could come running over him. He will not move. That's a good feeling, right? And it looks good from the outside. Your dog behaves well. So all of those little pieces come together to create a scenario where you're just going to keep perpetuating this. It's very, very, very hard to break because you have to break all the pieces. You have to have the knowledge that what you do is wrong. You have to understand how it hurts your dog. You have to see that it causes them fear, and you have to let go of your guilt and your ego.
Ego is a huge part of, I've learned,
It's
ego
big.
is a very large part of this business. So you talk to any trainer, and they will all, I'm sure, share stories about, what they think is going on in the industry. But yeah, ego is a huge part of this, and I think once you let that go, that it opens you up to a lot more possibilities.
I agree.
Yeah. So, well, it's been an excellent conversation, so interesting, and I really appreciate that you took some time to chat with us today. And is there anything that you wanted to add before heading off to a client, I'm sure?
Well, to anybody who's listening to this, I would say if you've been on the fence about switching methods, do it. Find a trainer who can accompany you. Get somebody you'll be comfortable with, but switch. I promise you will never ever regret it, and your dogs will thank you for it.
And how can folks get in touch with you directly?
If they're around the Montreal area, or if they want to work at distance, because I do Skype consults, they can find me through our website, which is bravofido.com, and they can just send us an email right from there.
Excellent. Perfect. Thanks again so much, and you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Renee. Have a great
Take
day too.
care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Bravo Dog Knowledge Podcast. Please feel free to leave us a glowing review via iTunes if you liked what you listened to, and be sure to check us out at bravodog.ca.